weekdays at 1.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas. It's 6 a.m.
Welcome to this week's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American Sunday Business and Oil Sections, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the oil report of the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Sunday, September 20th. New solar plant highlights Permian's energy riches. Enel Green Power's Roadrunner plant will provide power to companies such as Mondelez and Clorox. The story was written by Mella McEwen. Located in Upton County, home to early oil boom towns Rankin and McCamey, Enel Green Power has begun operations at its Roadrunner solar plant. Enel recently completed the second and final phase of construction, adding an additional 245 megawatts to the 252 megawatt first phase that began operation at the end of 2019. The announcement comes on the heels of the startup of Enel's expansion of its High Lonesome wind farm in Upton and Crockett counties, bringing its total to 500 megawatts. High Lonesome is expected to generate not only 1.9 terawatt hours annually, but generate over $75 million in property taxes and over $90 million in lease payments to local landowners over the life of the project. Enel also operates the 63-megawatt Snyder Wind Farm in Scurry County. Quote, "The Permian Basin is rich in natural resources like oil and gas, but has seen huge investment that leverage its other natural strengths like solar and wind over the years," said Ben Shepard, president of the Permian Basin Petroleum Association, in an email to the Reporter-Telegram. Quote, "In fact, much of these large investments have been made by oil and gas companies in the region. There is no doubt that while the Permian Basin has proven to be America's oil field, it also has the opportunity to provide energy security in diverse ways, and we are excited to see continued growth and development of all types of energy that benefits communities and creates jobs. With continued investment in physical and technological infrastructure like roads, electric transmission, and broadband service, the region can continue to thrive and benefit the entire state," end quote. Joe Parenti, Enel's site manager at the Roadrunner plant, said that the plant is the largest solar project in the state and the company's largest in the U.S., generating 1,200 gigawatt hours annually. The project is expected to generate $60 million in property tax revenue over its lifetime, he said, in an email to the Reporter-Telegram. Construction created 500 jobs, and the plant itself will employ 9 permanent full-time operations positions and several logistics, maintenance planning, and project support roles for the company's continued solar growth in Texas. Enel's solar and wind facilities will power some major corporations. Quote, "Mondelez, maker of Oreo cookies, among other products, and Clorox are the two corporate off-takers purchasing solar energy from Roadrunner," said Parenti. Quote, "Some of the remaining energy will be sold on Texas's wholesale electricity market. Enel Green Power's larger portfolio of customers in North America include Anheuser-Busch at Our Thunder Ranch Wind Farm, T-Mobile at Our Red Dirt Wind Farm, Facebook at the Rattlesnake Creek Wind Farm, and many more," end quote. Danone North America will purchase enough electricity from Enel's High Lonesome Wind Farm to produce the equivalent of about 800 million cups of yogurt and over 80 million gallons of milk each year. asked if Enel would consider additional facilities if Roadrunner meets expectations, Parenti replied, quote, "There are a number of factors driving renewables growth in Texas. The state offers excellent transmission infrastructure and a competitive market, augmented by commercial demand from customers like Mondelez and Clorox. The wind and solar resource is critical as well, which makes West Texas appealing," end quote. Citing the High Lonesome Wind Farm, he said his company now operates over 1 gigawatt of wind and solar capacity in Texas. Quote, "The state is a key growth market for us as we build around 1 gigawatt of new capacity per year across the U.S. and Canada. We're introducing new technologies to our portfolio here as well. Recently, we started construction on the Lilly Solar Plus Storage Project in North Texas, which pairs a 181 MW DC solar plant with a 50 MW AC storage battery system. We have many other wind and solar projects in advanced development across the state. The outlook for renewables in Texas remains strong, and we're excited to keep growing here," end quote. Railroad Commission candidate says flared gas could be used to generate electricity. The story was written by Mella McEwen. Kristen Castaneda debuted her campaign for the Democratic nomination for Railroad Commissioner in Midland last October. Quote, "I went directly to the Petroleum Club to a Wildcat Committee reception," she said last week during her virtual tour of Texas's focus on the Permian Basin. Quote, "There were 250, mostly men, talking about oil and how it impacted Midland. They were at the Petroleum Club to honor the chief executive officer of Exxon for some of its environmental initiatives. I went into the Petroleum Club wearing my campaign badge as a Democrat for the Railroad Commission. Did I get a reception? Yes, I did. Those executives wanted to talk to me about my campaign and wanted to talk about, quote, what do you plan to do about flaring? It's killing our industry. It's killing our air. We can't do this anymore. We have to stop flaring." There are no easy solutions, she said, but she has made combating flaring inventing a centerpiece of her campaign after she won the nomination this summer in a runoff. She said operators who flare defend their actions as necessary because they have no takeaway capacity. Instead, she said, they could install microgrids to use that flared gas to generate electricity to power their own operations. Quote, "And when there's excess gas, and there will be, they can put it into the electric grid, and it can go to Houston. They're wasting enough gas to power Houston," she said. Operators could also re-inject that gas back into the reservoirs to enhance oil and gas production, or finding alternative uses for wellbores, like for geothermal energy. Castaneda calls for incentives to install computer farms around Midland that could be powered by electricity generated by that flared gas. That would create good-paying jobs and bring some stability to the Midland economy, she said. State Representative Mary Gonzalez from El Paso joined the campaign to speak in support of Castaneda and said the race is the most important statewide, particularly for rural Texas. Quote, "There needs to be a balance between oil and gas, which is extremely important to the economy, but also protecting the space for agriculture, for farmers and ranchers," she said. "We need to find that balance for future Texans," end quote. She said she is worried about what Texas agriculture will look like 20 years from now. Quote, "I worry because if we don't have statewide leaders who can find a way to balance oil and gas and agriculture, it will erode the beautiful parts of Texas. Without full transparency from the Railroad Commission and people acting with foresight, we can't preserve the beautiful parts of Texas," end quote. State Representative Terry Canales, also speaking in support of Castaneda, agreed, saying there needs to be a balance between the needs of the industry and the future of the state. Quote, as a father of five, I ask if we're leaving a better state, if we're going to leave the beauty of Texas or be a scourge and leave scars on the land. That's something we need to consider. Sometimes damage is irreparable, but it doesn't have to be that way. There are ways to enforce rules and regulations around the industry without stomping out the industry, making sure we get the benefits of both worlds, preserving nature, but also harvesting minerals in a fashion that's not harmful, end quote. He said he has seen both sides, growing up on a cattle ranch in South Texas that has been in his family for nearly eight generations, while also being a beneficiary of the natural resources of the land. Quote, I've seen the irreparable damage the industry can do. When you talk balance at the Railroad Commission, it's someone who's not anti-industry but pro-people. There's a perception Democrats are anti-industry, Democrats are anti-fracking. That's simply not true. Democrats are making sure we take care of what we have and do it responsibly, that the manner in which we do produce the minerals we are blessed with doesn't cause further damage, he said. Joe Herrera, who is running for state representative of House District 53, said environmental issues cross party lines. Quote, I've found when I'm in meetings in these small communities, when I'm able to meet people and talk environmental issues, I saw as many Democrats as Republicans, as many Trump hats when we are talking water rights, Herrera said. These issues resonate, and that's why Krista's talk of enforcing laws in place is very important. It's about finding a balance, and I feel we paint Democrats as anti-business, but we want the industry to thrive and be successful, but we're also willing to take a stand on the negligence of the industry. End quote. The oil and gas industry, said Castaneda, quote, is not monolithic. Many in the industry know flaring is an existential threat. Just last week, major investment houses and institutional investors said they would no longer invest in or buy energy company stocks unless the industry does something serious about flaring and venting and address environmental greenhouse gas concerns. There's a seismic shift in the industry, and some who know the shift is coming, and they can and have to do better about flaring and venting, and some are resisting. We need a level playing field where those who have long followed the law are rewarded for following the law, and those who refuse to follow the law must get better. End quote. She said it has been illegal in the state of Texas for over a century to flare and vent and otherwise waste natural resources, and criticized the Railroad Commission for rubber-stamping exemption permits allowing operators to flare and vent gas. Castaneda said there were 7,000 in 2019 alone. Quote, we need a comprehensive, fact-filled study of how to stop flaring, she said. If you're an operator, what percentage of produced gas are you flaring? There are many metrics floating around. If Permian operators are flaring 60% of their produced gas from a single location or set of wells from a single location, why? Do they not have any pipeline capacity there? What are they doing to get takeaway capacity? Have they thought about microgrids so they could use that flared gas to generate electricity? They could re-inject the gas back into the formation for enhanced recovery. They could do compressed natural gas or liquefied natural gas on site. There are a lot of questions to ask. There are no straightforward, easy answers, but there is a metric by which we could figure out the answers to these questions. End quote. Energy companies find new ways to find operating cash. The story was written by Mella McEwen. Cash-strapped energy companies are increasingly turning to an old-fashioned strategy to boost cash flow. Called factoring, it is the practice of selling invoices to a third party for cash, giving that third party the right to collect what's owed. But now a new wrinkle is developing called managed accounts payable. It is essentially reverse factoring, said Barry Moorhead, president of Bold Business Capital. Quote, MAP, or reverse factoring, is used by 100% of Fortune 100 companies, he told members of the Society of Independent Earth Scientists at their monthly luncheon last week. He said it has evolved over the last couple of years to meet the needs of the oil and gas industry. Service companies may do $1 million in work for an operator each month, but typically don't get paid for that work for 30 to 45 days or longer, he said. Quote, service companies struggle to do the work when they haven't gotten paid for the work they did the last 2 months, he said. Our company can give them cash for the jobs they've done, less a discount fee, end quote. What differentiates MAP from traditional factoring is that it lets the service provider decide how quickly they want to get paid, and the discount fee is set depending on that length of time. After receiving the invoice and determining if the vendor is willing to accept a discount fee and how quickly it wants to be paid, Bold then coordinates the payment, Moorhead said. In return, those discounts boost the operator's bottom line, turning its accounts payable into a profit center, he said. Not only does it receive a discount on what it purchases, but streamlining its accounts payable operations reduces overhead costs and even headcount, he said. Quote, working capital management is the biggest benefit. More cash on hand, more liquidity, Moorhead said. Companies like his are taking a higher risk than traditional banks and offer additional services, Moorhead said. He told his audience that his background is in banking, working for federally insured banks in alternative lending. Quote, I understand the need from the entrepreneur side to get cash, he said. A bank won't lend to small businesses that need cash because they're growing too rapidly to qualify, or they're too young to get that prime interest rate, end quote.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Sunday, September 20th, 2020. Fooled by Randomness by Dennis Elam, assistant professor at Texas A&M San Antonio and a 1966 graduate of Andrews High School. Nassim Nicholas Taleb advocates a black swan robust society. This means a society that can withstand difficult to predict events. His metaphor of a black swan is an unexpected or difficult to imagine event. For centuries, it was believed all swans were white, until a black swan was discovered in Australia. The COVID pandemic has been a black swan event. Yet, in retrospect, perhaps society was clinging to rearview mirror ideas of how to get things done. Did we really need airplanes crammed with passengers leaving major airports every 90 seconds? Apparently, we did not. Entire industries are facing a top-to-bottom remake, or possibly the loss of large segments. Exxon and Chevron are partnering with the Rocky Mountain Institute to track methane emissions in the Permian Basin. The industry has come under criticism for flaring excess natural gas. Most major international energy firms like BP are already looking away from carbon fuels to wind and solar. In 10 years, Exxon has gone from the most valuable company on Earth to being ejected from the Dow Industrials. Hello, Black Swan event. Natural gas inventories swelled to 3.6 trillion cubic feet last week, above analyst expectations. Another unexpected event. As a result, natural gas futures collapsed 9.9% in one day to $2.042. Emerging markets have been the source of carbon fuel demand, but last quarter India's GDP dropped 39% from a year earlier. No wonder demand is faltering. Energy service continues to contract, losing over 100,000 jobs. Only 326% of S&P energy firms are now in bullish posture. The Fed has spent billions buying bonds to shore up the stock market. That money has found its way into tech and pharmaceutical shares. The NASD registered a new high, but the percent of NASD stocks in bullish position is only 55% and falling. Again, this speaks to narrowing breadth of leadership, with IPOs like Snowflake skewing the results. The fate of entire industries remains unknown. 6 months into the pandemic, America's offices sit half empty. Airline traffic is only 30% of what it was a year ago. Airline execs were in Washington this week asking for $25 billion to keep workers employed. As noted, that is a small number compared to a $1.5 trillion rescue. But with Zoom and WebEx dominating the new conversation, airlines look a lot like the horse and buggy industry circa 1905. Hotels are doing no better, with airline travel reduced. Governor Abbott is allowing more restaurants and bars to have larger patronage, but expectations are still that many such firms will not survive. The big winner is Amazon, now planning hundreds of new distribution centers. Brick and mortar retail continues to shrink. The Economist. Structure of the Economy by M. Ray Perryman, head of the Perryman Group. Prior to COVID-19, the U.S. was in the midst of a 10-plus year expansion. While not perfect, the basic structure of this economy was basically sound. If this structure is kept intact, the recovery can be both robust and rapid. If it is allowed to deteriorate, things will inevitably be much worse. I made this observation during my first speech after things began to shut down, and have repeated it literally hundreds of times in subsequent speeches, meetings, columns, interviews, articles, forecasts, newsletters, and reports. It's an inescapable truism. The coronavirus aid, relief, and economic security CARES Act helped preserve this vital structure. It provided relief to individuals, small businesses, and key industries, which helped to mitigate the fallout from the pandemic and related safety requirements. The Federal Reserve, Fed, response has also been massive. Since March, trillions of dollars have poured into the economy through monetary and fiscal stimulus, and the Fed has slashed interest rates to basically zero. More than 150 million stimulus checks were sent. Small businesses received about $500 billion in loans. Hard-hit sectors, such as airlines, received assistance. While imperfect in both conception and execution, these initiatives have generally been successful in maintaining the structure to support a strong recovery. Unfortunately, many provisions of the CARES Act will soon expire, or have already. With the end of this relief, we will likely see the recovery stall. Airlines, which took advantage of CARES Act assistance, are prohibited from laying off workers until October 1st, but tens of thousands of layoffs will commence at that time. Nearly one of every six restaurants has closed either long-term or permanently, and 40% of operators don't think their restaurants will survive the next 6 months without additional support. Many Americans are facing potential eviction or foreclosure, and families with displaced jobs face food insecurity and other critical issues. The problem is quite simple. The CARES Act was beneficial, but designed for a major displacement of 2 or 3 months. We are now at 8 months and counting, with major surge threats potentially on the horizon. Election politics are primary reason for inaction. However, the CARES Act passed essentially unanimously. Hence, any fear of a challenge from the left for supporting industry bailouts or from the right for expanding social programs is misplaced. That ship has sailed. Keeping the structure in place means continuing to help individuals stay in their homes and have enough to eat. Small businesses survive and key industries remain viable. The structure is in danger of crumbling, which only prolongs and intensifies the agony. It's time to put politics aside and, as Sam Houston said, do right and risk the consequences. Stay safe.
Thank you for joining us for this week's readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American Sunday Business and Oil sections. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device. This is a Recording Library of West Texas Community Update.
Midland Habitat for Humanity is accepting applications for home ownership opportunities. Deadline to submit is September 30. Applications are available at the Habitat office, 305 East Texas Avenue. For more information, call 686-8877.
Of all the interesting places in our country, the American West may just have the most interesting stories. Recording Library of West Texas volunteer Jack reads articles from Range, American Cowboy, and other publications on the Western Magazine Hour, Wednesday mornings at 11 and again Sunday afternoons at 5 on Recording Library of West Texas Radio. Read by listening.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 64 and clear. Tonight, clear with a low in the mid-70s. Then, tomorrow, clear with a high in the mid-90s. Tomorrow night, clear with a low in the mid-70s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas.
Welcome to this week's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American Sunday Lifestyle sections, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Sunday, September 20th, 2020. Life and Times. Abby's Gift. Sister Gives Brother Ultimate Gift by Ruth Campbell, R-C-A-M-P-B-E-L-L at OAOA.com. After trying in secret over a period of years, Abby Hernandez has succeeded in giving her brother the gift of life. The University of Texas Permian Basin softball player donated one of her kidneys to him in August. Diagnosed at age 2 with nephrotic syndrome, Abby said Oscar got his first kidney at age 16. He had the organ for about 3 years, but then got put on dialysis for about 7 years. Her whole family had gotten tested, but no one was a match for 27-year-old Oscar. She tried to get tested previously at age 19 without her parents' consent, but was told she was too young. The procedure took place August 4th at Las Palmas del Sol Medical Center in El Paso. A hospital representative said the age range to donate a kidney at their transplant center is 21 to 65. The Mayo Clinic website says, nephrotic syndrome is a kidney disorder that causes your body to pass too much protein in your urine. Nephrotic syndrome is usually caused by damage to the clusters of small blood vessels in your kidneys that filter waste and excess water from your blood. When she turned 21 in February, Abby got tested again, but didn't tell her parents again. She was a match. Hernandez told her parents. They were happy, but I think they were more concerned and worried because both of their kids were going to go under, Hernandez said. It was definitely a split reaction. They didn't know how to really feel. For her, it's going to take many more weeks before she recovers. I would obviously have to take it very slow, and when I do return back, I would obviously have to take it very slow when I do return back. And as far as my brother, his recovery is 3 to 4 months. He has to take it very slow, and he has way more restrictions than I do. This is his second kidney transplant, Hernandez said. Mentally and emotionally,